Okay. This week we read the subject of Ramos and Kedosha. Again, a double cedra, which contains together a substantial number of mitzvahs in the cedra. A good portion of Tayag, well over 10%. I want to look at a particular area that I think is of interest and importance to all of us, and it begins in Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Aleph, an area that relates to our lives directly and is a little hard to define and requires us to make an evaluation of where we are, who we are, what we want, how we define our values, and from what basis do we derive them. The Torah says, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe l'amor, God says to Moshe, Daber b'nei Yisrael v'amartah lehem, speak to the people of Israel and tell them, Ani Hashem Elokechem, I am the Lord your God. Ki ma'asei eretz Mitzrayim asher yishavtem bo lo sasu. Like the deeds, the practices of the land of Egypt where you dwelled, do not do. And similarly, like the deeds of the land of Canaan to which I'm bringing you, you should also not do. And in their statutes, in their ways, do not walk, do not follow. You should do my, follow my laws. And obey my statutes to follow them. Ani Hashem Elokechem. Ushmartemes chukosai v'smishpatei asher yaseh osam adam v'chai bohem. And you should observe my statutes and my laws that a person does v'chai bohem and live through them. Ani Hashem. That's what the Torah says. Now let's look at Rashi. Rashi says in Pasuk Gimel, Ki ma'asei eretz Mitzrayim magid she'ma'aseihem shel Mitzrayim shel Kananiyim mikukol mikol umos, to teach us that the deeds of the Egyptians, their way of life, of the Egyptians and the Canaanites, were the most degenerate of all the nations. The oso makom she'yashru bo Yisrael mikukol min akol, and the place where Israel lived in Goshen, that was the most degenerate of all of them. The Torah says, don't follow the ways of the Egyptians. They're debased. Don't follow the ways of the Canaanim, where you're going, because they're also debased. They're the worst of all. So let's look. Asher ani mevi'etchem shama, Rashi says, Magid she'osan amamin she'kopshu Yisrael mikukolum yoser mikulam. Interesting thing. To teach us that the nations that the that Israel conquered are the most degenerate. Meaning God gave us the land of Israel, sense, to redeem it from the most corrupt, the most depraved of all the nations. Meaning we were exiled in the most depraved of nations, the Mitzrayim, and we conquered the land of the most depraved people, the Canaanim. How could they both be the most depraved? Well, there's always competition in that area. But the fact is, it's not as if it was a lateral move, just from one place to the next, you know, like from Spain to France or vice versa. It was from the depths that we descended into Egypt and we retained our uniqueness, and then it was to the depths, really, in Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan, that we had to be admonished not to follow their practices. Uvuchukosem lo selechu, and you should not follow in their statutes, their traditions. Of course, the question which we have to ask, which Rashi touches on here, is, this is the introduction to the Parsha of Arayos. Now, it covers a lot of laws, of Tariag mitzvahs, including 365 mitzvahs losasei, prohibitions. So what is really added by the statement, Kimasei eretz mitzvah mashay yishavtem olosasu, if what they do is asur, forbidden, so it's already included in the other prohibitions. And if it's not asur necessarily, so why are we avoiding it? There must be some positive benefit to it. So what is added by this statement, really, just not to follow their ways, and the v'chukosem lo selechu, don't walk in their traditions. So Rashi asks this question, mohiniach hakosov shelo amar, what exactly is the Torah left out that needs to be supplemented by this admonition?
Ela Rashi says, Elu nimusos shelohem. These are their customs, their traditions of the non-Jews. Devar machakukin lohem. Things that are engraved, meaning set. They're just part of the national culture. Kedon tartios vitstadios. Like theaters and...
Call the office,
and loudspeakers, like theaters and stadiums. All right, please forgive me. You know, the plural of stadium is stadia, but in modern English they use stadium, so I'll go with that. So one says theaters and stadiums, that's Sukkos Agoy, and Remer Omer Elu Darkei HaAmori Shemono Chachamim. These are the ways, the practices of the Amori that Chazal enumerated. And basically superstitions. Now this is the Kitasin Lo Selechu, which is the beginning of the Pasuk Arayos Nachremos, is actually found again at the end of Kedoshim. We have it twice this coming Shabbos. After the Parshas Arayos, the Torah again warns us the Lo Selechu Bechukos Hagoy. It's in Perek Chof Pasuk Chof Gimel. Do not walk in the traditions of the nation, Ashani Mishalech Mipnechem, that I am sending out before you. Kieskol Eila Asuv Akutzba. They did all these things, and I was abominated by them. I detested them, and so they had to be driven out. And the Torah continues. Well, Marlochem, I said to you, you will inherit their land. I'll give it to you because they were depraved. So what exactly is added? If we have all these Yisurim anyway, so what does the Bukhukhetem Oseirechu add to us? Secondly, what exactly are theaters and circuses? It'd be good to know, because we have a lot of theaters and circuses today today also. What is the Issur? Now, what are the parameters? And what are the Yisurim involved? I remember years ago having a discussion with a rabbi about the travails of modern orthodoxy. So I asked him to define it, and he said, well, you're not committed to Torah. So I said, why are everyone committed to Torah? Vila, halacha, everyone has a commitment. He says, well, there's an openness to modern culture. So I said, well, you can't base a religious movement on going to the movies. And that's not a religious movement. That might be a part of a person's life, but that's not a religious movement. It was left short of a definition for it. So the question is, how do you define it? If Rashi says the Isser is Tartios, it's Tadios, and the Gemara Avodah Zarah they add, and the Midrash adds also what they called Karkisaos, circuses, what's the nature of the Isser? When can a person partake, and when must a person refrain? What's Mutter and what's Asur? And finally, this paragraph ends with a beautiful statement. V'chai bohem, u'shmartem eschukosai v'smishpatei asher yaseh osam adam, v'chai bohem, you'll live by that. So how is this living by that? Granted, a person follows all the mishpatim and chukos of the Torah, so granted, we know that's life. But v'chai bohem seems to be the outcome of, at least on some level, of Kimasei Eretz Mitzrayim and Eretz Kanan, Lo Tzatzu, Ubuchukosem Lo Selechu. So how in fact is that so? Now, lest you think this is just idle talk, it happens to be one of the Targ Mitzvahs. The Mitzvah of Chukos Ha'akum is, Lo Selechu Ubuchukos Ha'akum, is taken from, not from Ubuchukosem Lo Selechu, but at the end of Kedoshim. In Lo Selechu B'chukos Hagoy, the last mitzvah in Kedosha. So the Sefer Chinuch says, Shelo lo leches b'chukos ha'emori, v'chein b'chukos Hagoy, not to follow their ways, their traditions. V'hu adin l'chol shar Hagoy, it's not just a reference to actual idolaters, but any of the nations. Kirinyam mipnei shehem sar me'achrei Hashem v'odim avod azar, because they veer away from God and they worship avod azar. Alright, v'inyan ha-mitzvah u'shalo nitznahi kohem b'malbushenu v'inyonenu. The substance of the mitzvah is we do not follow them in our dress and in our ways. U'kumosha omru b'sifra, which Rashi quoted, u'v'chukosehem lo selechu, Shotelchu b'nimus shelohem. Don't follow in their minhagim, their customs. B'tvarim hachatukim lohem. Those things which are set, engraved, meaning part of their existence. Kegon, kitraos, v'kirkasos, istatrios. V'chol elu hemine schok she'osim v'kibutzeyem k'shem iskabsen laso shigonos uznus v'vodas alilim. And all these things are methods of levity, frivolity, that they do when they gather together, laso shigonos, when they do to perform through their error-filled ways, and immorality, and idolatry. That's one shot. Rashi had a second shot also, which the Chiduch is quoting the Sifra here. That's Darkei Amori. Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseir omer shel tegadel tzitzis harosh kohem v'lo tesaper kumi. Choma. Shel yalech min hatzdodim v'yaniach seor b'emtso. The Zonik Rabloris. Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseir says we can't model our hairstyles after that. Alright? That certain hairstyles that always seem to make a return. The most common one that Chazal decried is the time of the latter part of the second Beis HaMikdash, when the Romans came with the blowers. The blowers means they would shave the side of the head and leave the hair down the middle. Or another version, leaving hair hanging out the back, like they call that today a ponytail, it's a word Hebrew, a chak-chak. It comes out the back. So the blowers had a hiatus of about 1900 years, and now it's back. But you have other styles. So in fact, you find that that's the classic definition of kukos hagod, not to follow their clothing styles, their fashions, or their hairstyles. Of course, it requires definition too. What does it mean? If they wear a shirt, you can't wear a shirt. If they wear a blouse, you can't wear a blouse. It has to have some definition. Rabbi, why do you define it? I remember hearing this when I was young. But it means we always have to be behind the fashion trends. We can't be in keeping with the fashion trends. That is to say, something new comes out, new style, new cut, and we run to buy it because that is what they are showing. That's what the world has seized onto. To me, anyone in the fashion industry here, good. To me, the whole thing's a big scam anyway. I mean, you have a couple of people who sit around deciding what people have to buy next year, and then, oh, if you don't buy that, you're really out. I can't talk to you anymore. I can't have you at my sim. The whole thing makes no sense. But it plays on the human need to conform and to be part of a group to share common styles. But it can't just be any type of dress, although surely it was defined that way, as we well know, by our Haredi brothers, where they essentially do is adopted the dress of the Polish nobility in the latter part of the 1700s. And they said, that's it. And in fact, they don't partake of any of the fashions, whether in keeping with the trends or behind the trends. They have just the one trend. And that's why it all looks the same, black and white. Black jacket or a light shirt. And it hasn't changed. Frankly, I can't imagine it changing for another few centuries until, even though, it's not, it's good for Eastern Europe. I sometimes laugh to myself in Eretz Yisrael in the summertime because black, heavy black suits are not necessarily the most comfortable garb in Yerushalayim in August. What's that?
And the fur hats.
Well, they have, they're sophisticated enough not to wear the fur hats in the summertime. All right? I remember once a Muncie politician went to seek the endorsement of one of the Hasidish Rebbeim in the summertime. So he put on a strimal, the first strimal. And he walked in, they whispered to him, nobody wears that in the summer. So, how do you define it, though? Now, the Rambam brings us down the halacha in Hilchos Akum. What's that? Well, it's frozen. That's right. Style fashion is frozen. That's correct. Had it been blue? That's it. Everyone wearing blue today. What's that?
Yes, yes. You know, interesting that you mention that. You ever see that famous picture of the Rambam on the Machberet? All right, is that accurate? No. That picture first arose in the 1500s, some 300 years after the Rambam lived. And it was just a concoction of an artist in the 1500s, what he thought the Rambam would look like. It could be anywhere, so we don't know. But the Chacham Tzvi wore knickers, because that was the style in Amsterdam in the 1700s when he lived. But we don't know what the Rambam looked like, notwithstanding that generations do think he's a picture on the Machzor. That's okay. The Rambam says, Perkei Aleph Hilchos, Halacha Aleph in Hilchos Avodas Kochavim. He basically quotes, the Sefer Chinuch really quoted him, Ein Hochem Bechukos Avodas Kochavim Olum Medamin Lohem. We don't imitate that. People went crazy, by the way. We don't imitate them. Loba Malbush, Loba Sayar. Not in our clothing styles, nor our hairstyles. The Chayotze Bohem, and similar aping or mimicry. Shenemar V'loseach B'chukos Hagoyim, V'nemu B'chukos Hagoyim, V'loseach Leichel. Don't follow their ways. And he has other Pesukim too. Hakol B'inin Echad U'masi, Shuli Yadamu Lohem. It's simply an intention on the part of the Jew to mimic the Akum. Eloyia ha-Yisrael muvgol mehem, v'yadua b'malbusho, u'v'shar ma'asov, k'mo shehu muvdol mehem b'madza'o u'v'dayasov. That's what we have to understand about it. What's the point of differentiating ourselves in dress? It's because we have to look different. We have to, that's part of the v'avdala shem in ha'am, it's v'havdala, saying Yisrael la'amim. Part of havdala, part of the distinction is not to look the same. You should be able to look at a Jew and say, where it's a man or a woman, say, oh, this person looks like a Jew. Now, the fact is, we know this amongst ourselves, but you can have a spot on the industry, on the street, or in an amusement park, or in Manhattan, or even in out of town, you know, the long skirt, and the baseball cap, you know. I've seen people with the baseball caps and stickers hanging out. Oh yes, you're completely identical. Very good. Nobody knows you. No. But that's va'avdil. But know what the Rambam says. You have to be moved on by him v'yadua and known also b'malbusho u'v'shar ma'asav and his other deeds as well. It's not enough just to look like a Jew. You have to act like a Jew also. If you're going to wear the malbush, if you're going to walk the walk, you have to talk the talk too. If you look like a Jew, you have to act like it also. B'malbusho u'v'shar ma'asov. K'moshu muvdol mehem b'magza'o v'deyosov. Just like he is distinct in his thoughts and his opinions. And that's part of this also. What we're talking about here is the, not just the creation, but the maintenance of a unique Jewish culture and identity. V'chein hu omer, v'avdil aschem en ha'amim. You have to be separate from the nations. You have to look different. Lo yilbash b'malbush hamiyuchad lahem. You can't wear something that's unique to them. Which brings us back to our area. That was the Rambam added. Not just malbush stuff, but malbush hamiyuchad lahem. Meaning something unique to them. There's something unique to them. So, Haredim, one way of looking at it, that anything that's in the popular world, any style, whether it's American or Asian or European, is defined as chukos ha'akum. In fact, this became a big, to a small extent today, but much less than it was in the 19th century, which we all remember, whereby one of the inroads that the Enlightenment made, and it didn't necessarily draw people away from Torah, although it was perceived as that, was the wearing of Western dress. So you find even in our literature, people speaking about Rabbanim noted for their trim beards and their Western dress. Now, Western dress meant suit jackets that were short, as opposed to pockets and jacket shorts that hung down very long. Short jackets became defined as Western dress, but it became, again, in certain circles, depending where you were in Europe, it became more or less popular. But something else arose, because ultimately, if you wore a black short jacket, you know, how different were you from those who wore long black jackets? So you were doing the same thing, except size of the jacket, which can't be much of a distinction.
In the 19th century, there arose another distinction, which if you're, maybe you're aware, maybe not, sensitive to. In the Haredi world, they changed the buttons. In Western suits, the buttons are on the right side. In the Bekishes, the buttons are always on the left side. Why? Okay. Could be. I don't know. But the main issue was just to create a different type of garb. Meaning, if she was right, if they button, if the buttons are on the right, the buttons will be on the left. You can make an argument, it's more chosher than the buttons on the left. What's that? Well, I could take my tax and use it this way too. Right. I don't see how that works, because whatever you have to meet in the middle, alright? You're not going to really connect it like this, or it happens to me sometimes. You have to keep in the middle regardless. Well, whatever. It folds over the, there's a double breast, it folds over to the right. But the main thing was to have a distinct type of garb, but it's malbush on the roof of it. Then the question becomes, like an argument, you stick around, is what we're wearing today, is it unique to the non-Jews? Not necessarily, except in the sense that the majority population is not Jewish. But are they wearing it because they're non-Jews, to express a certain nimus, a traditional statement or a custom? You could argue no. That's why you have these two opinions in the Jewish world. One means anything they wear, we can't wear. The other is only if it's miyuchad lahem, meaning if it has some significance to them, then they wear. Now, we can define significance in the terms that Rabbi Wein did years ago, that significance means if they attribute to these fashions an inordinate amount of significance, then that already is something that a Jew should eschew, because that elevates the notion of fashion to something beyond what it is. Fashion, of course, makes a statement for an individual. The primary statement we want to make is that we're modest people. We don't want to call attention to ourselves as physical beings, all right? The purpose of fashion, of course, is to call attention to yourself. What I'm wearing, it look like, in terms of the color, the style, or the appearance. So you could look at miyuchalim in terms of religious significance, which by and large clothing does not have today in the Western world, or in terms of its cultural significance. If one would want to adopt a certain style because the American people are wearing it, or a haircut because American people are wearing it, then that's already, you're veering very close to violation of Chutos HaAklam, if not already violating it. That's why I don't know what, I remember one yeshiva at least locally, very strict about kids not getting buzz haircuts, along the side, along the back, because that literally just to mimic what the popular culture has. What's a haircut? Us. We'll thank whatever hair we have left, but whatever, you look presentable, that's the haircut, that's the certain style, this, shape, and that's, women are different, of course, but women really, I don't know if women model themselves on particular trends in the non-Jewish world, but rather, it's a personal look that people have. Let's say something.
This is all proactive, not about, but what about shedding the something in order to be like them? Things that are identifying
characters. Good question. Yeah, yarmulke. So the Taz actually says, when the Taz speaks about a yarmulke, he says, yarmulke is a minig. The Gemara mentions it, it's a minig. The Taz says that it's a minig that in his time is ready to chiyuv in our time. Why? Because chukos hagoy to go bareheaded. They go bareheaded. Chukos hagoy.
It's not induction.
That's right. Except in certain circumstances. They mentioned the person in court or some government official, which was not uncommon. But if it becomes the custom to be bareheaded, then you can't follow it. Now, you should know, as popular students of American culture as we all are, that bareheadedness is a very recent phenomenon. You know when it started? You don't remember? Kennedy. If you look at old pictures, old films, that's right. Every man always wore a hat. If you look at, as I've done regularly, little clips of, baseball games in the 30s and 40s. Everyone in the stands, every adult male is wearing a hat and suit. All right? Because that was a standard dress. Kennedy came along and was bareheaded as a sign of his youthful vigor, as opposed to Eisenhower. And so then the hat industry in America collapsed to the extent that today those who get to wearing black hats are Orthodox Jewish males and Southern black gentlemen. Only two groups left that wear black hats, wear Stetsons. Everyone else, or Borsellinos. Everyone else is wearing, is bareheaded, or they have some other type of chapeau that they wear. Really? I didn't know that. I didn't get that memo. Okay. That's right. Cardinals do. That's right. So now we have to get back. We'll return to this area in a few moments, but why is the pasuk necessary? Masay eres nesher yishafnim ba. Masay eres nesher shani mezuz mishama. This is asur. It's asur. This is easily said with the same lo seleisu. So I think the answer is that it's something we're all familiar with. So we were entrenched in a very, very powerful empire with a dominant culture. See, Mitzrayim really was the American today. America, no doubt, is the cultural leader of the planet. All the other nations of the world try to mimic America in both some of its good aspects and some of its awful aspects. But American culture is pervasive. It's very hard to fight against a popular culture. You're swimming upstream. So that's why the Torah gives us a special admonition. Shemaseh Eretz Mitzrayim Asher Yishavtem Bo. You dwell there. You know what it is. You know what the struggle is. But lo sasu. Not just because it's a prohibition. Because to be drawn after it, even if you don't, if you don't descend to the level of prohibition, it's still distortive of the Jewish mind and the Jewish soul. Just to be drawn out, just to be attracted to it. The lure is very powerful. And to go then, to go then into another dominant culture, because remember, after Mitzrayim was defeated by us, so Canaan assumed its powerful role. And Canaan wasn't just one tribe, 31 kings. We had 31, the whole society. A society which had a devout, degenerate, depraved culture. So you walk into a certain environment, it's very difficult to resist. This is what it is. So what the Torah is telling us is just like in Mitzrayim, you have to create your own Jewish culture. And by the way, we're not completely successful. So too, when you come to Canaan, don't think you're going to take their culture and moderate it, ameliorate it, or convert it to your uses. No, it's lo sasu. When Jews come, they have to supplant, they have to displace the culture of the Canaanim, because otherwise you're going to descend into the same type of depravity, which is exactly what happened. So don't succumb to popular culture. We always have to maintain a distance. Distance emotionally, which is probably the most difficult of all, and of course spiritually and intellectually, and that's a challenge. So now how does that challenge manifest itself in terms of what Rashi says, Tartios is Tadios, the theaters, the stadiums, the circuses. So what are they exactly? So here too, you find that there are different opinions in the Rishonim. One approach, which the Maral has given, which you find in the Rishonim also, is what it sounds like. Bate Sof. What's a theater? A theater is a base sof, a place where people go for frivolity, for levity, in order to escape. Others say differently. Others say, like the Sussei Chachamim on Rashi here, and the Sefer Zikaron, and others understand it as Makom Beis Rav, Halkaran Shel Melachim, palaces of the kings, or Makom Beis Vad, Lekomim Avodah Zarah, or places where idolatrous priests would gather. Meaning, according to this, it has to involve some type of religious connotation. It has to be some religious connection to what they're doing. If it's some levity, if it's some base folk, it wouldn't be enough to maintain an issue. As long as it has
it wouldn't be enough. It has to involve some type of avodah zara connotation. Sure, theaters, we understand it, but not necessarily a play. What are stadiums? See, here everyone's in agreement. All right, it's something that I trust as far into our world, but Mepharshim say stadiums, what we call today Plaza del Toros, bullfighting arenas, bullfighting. That's what the Maral says as well. Chok shemeisisenes hashivar mesachayos liga. Places where they encourage bulls, oxen, animals to gore each other. That is, you'd be amazed how popular it is in the world today, in Spanish-speaking countries. Now, I saw it once. We had the opportunity once to actually attend, and I said no, because I think it's really elsewhere to go. But I did see, when I was in Spain, I did see it on television. It is actually, for all the costume and pageantry, it is quite a gruesome sport. With the intention being to torture and to kill an animal in front of tens of thousands of cheering human beings. It's just amazing to watch. What's that? I love it. That's right. That's right. And the bulls are really bred for the purpose of becoming more aggressive, just to better entertain the masses. So that type of sport, so to speak, is very difficult to sustain. It's like a sport that you could sum up in three words. Tzar Balei Chayim. If you want to come watch animals being tortured, so that's the sport. And it's just amazing how it plays to a primitive part of the human personality, how people are drawn to it. It's very popular, especially today in Spain and Mexico, which are the most popular locale sport. What's that? And it's a significant cultural event also. The season involved, I was just reading recently, there's the famous hotel in Barcelona that was known as the residence of the matadors during the season. And they're tearing the hotel down, building condominiums. And people were wondering, it was beside themselves, what's going to happen to this great tradition? The matadors would come and stay here. The patrons would get to drink with them in the bars afterwards. What's happening to the whole culture? It's Tzar Balei Chayim masquerading as entertainment. So that's what they decried as estadios, fortunately, which leaves for us, you know, baseball and basketball, football, a little clever. Boxing, by the way, is a big problem. I think boxing is a big problem also. You're showing a shot of boxing today. So from Brooklyn, yeah. Doing pretty well, as a matter of fact. But it's hard to justify such a sport. Hard to justify, well, the whole point. That's something else. But it's hard to justify aggression as entertainment. But, you know, it does feed into a certain, it gives a certain relief to the pent-up aggression of the average American who watches other people clobber themselves. So there is a benefit in that, but it's hard. As you find, by the way, children who watch football, they'll become aggressive with each other, start tackling each other. So you do learn by it. You don't intentionally copy it, but what's that? Hunting. That's a good Jewish sport. The tshuva, I discussed in shul a couple of years ago, the Noda Yehuda was asked about that. And this was right in the 1700s. And he said, yeah, there's a tradition of hunting in the Jewish people. Esav! He was a hunter. To have a Jewish hunter, it's almost a contradiction in terms. Yes? Oh, I mean, furs. Uh-oh! Now we're treading on very dangerous ground. You're right, and I'll let you work it out amongst yourselves. The fact is, we're allowed to use animals for food and for clothing, all right? To torture animals, you can. All right. I'm going to, if you don't mind, I'm going to step outside for 5 minutes. And you can work this out amongst yourselves. On first, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want the PETA people to come spray paint my house. I'm not saying anything. Right. But you're correct. Sharon is correct in the sense that I don't know if wearing it is the issue, but you do have a you do have an ancillary topic or something we should, it's important to recognize, and that is that these animals that are raised for their fur are very cruelly treated. But it's not just for the furs. You know, it was a whole tumult, I think it was a year, 2 years ago, about veal. Veal's not treated that well either in its growth. You love veal, right? I'm saying, you know, it's the type of thing that we look at our plates, we eat our food, but we don't want to have to reckon with where it came from and how it got there. You know, just a few days before it was nicely clucking with its family, and now it's adorning my Shabbos table. But look, my two grandfathers, Lema Shalom, one was a shaychet, one was a butcher. So it's not as if I'm, you know, that sensitive to this area, but the fact is, you can't justify at all mistreatment, all right? Part of the mistreatment, by the way, that existed with fowl, although it may not take the place of much in the kosher world, the non-kosher world, is they stuff them. They don't really eat healthy for their short, miserable existence. They stuff them with nutrients and fat and all these other things that come out nice and plump. They're able to be slaughtered. So there's always these exposés coming out every couple of years. But in fact, kosher chickens, or chickens which will be kosher after they're slaughtered, can't be stuffed the same way, because they really stuff them. You can damage the windpipe and the esophagus and make them tray. Well, they can stuff it after it's dead, and stuff before it's dead, while it's alive. Now, that's the grandchild of stuff, not the goose. Yeah. In any event, Tzar Bal Chaim is something we should be sensitive to, and clearly, I mean, that's the type of klukos ha'akum, which is no role in the Jewish world. Now, obviously, if some object quite cogently to any place of entertainment or sports on grounds of Bittul Torah, and that you can't really escape. I remember even 2 years ago reading in the Jewish Observer that someone wrote an article decrying the very common custom amongst Jews today, especially in our area, of going to the circus on Chol HaMoed Pesach, Madison Square Garden, because he said, this is circus, these are circuses. Now, it's hard to say these are circuses, like Ringling Brothers that they had in mind, because they're also, the circuses of the Romans involve gladiators and human beings. It's not quite the same. But the point that they emphasized was a valid one. Bittul Torah. You can't argue with that. I mean, there's almost nothing that we could think of doing that is not going to take a back seat to Talmud Torah. So that's a factor to be weighed. Except for the fact that the Rambam notes, that in the Shulchan Aruch, that it's impossible for the average person to learn Torah effectively more than 9 hours a day. It's very hard. I mean, a lot of people struggle 9 minutes a day, but certainly more than 9 hours a day, so your mind needs a rest. And he even suggested one of the things to do to take the rest is to look at Tziura Noim, pretty pictures. The pretty pictures, they appeal to a certain aesthetic part of man, and they really see the mind, so it becomes just open to ideas. It is refreshing, because it's attraction, it's nature, other things, and that's possible. But therein lies the real dilemma, because the Tziur Noem of the Rambam might or may not be the entertainment industry of today. And the question is how we deal with it, because there's no doubt in the modern world there is a greater affinity for it than there is in the rest of the Jewish world. So I look at it from three perspectives. What are the values that are being taught or reinforced by the entertainment industry as provided to us through the Mimusei Ha'akum? The first thing that we mentioned already, and that is the real violence. When you have violence, it becomes a norm in life, then it's disastrous to a child, to a human being, to an adult for that matter. I saw an article the other day in the Times that a person was writing that many children saw a video of the Arab terrorists flying the planes into the World Trade Center, and ask their parents, what movie is that from? Because they really have no way of distinguishing real life from fiction. And it looked like a horror movie. But something is wrong with our world where a child is exposed to such I think there was a study a few years ago, the average child, by the time he reaches 15 years old, will witness on television maybe 17,000 homicides. It's a lot of homicides for some people witnessing, even if it is watered down. It reinforces and plays into man's aggressive instinct, which, if anything, has to be more harnessed than fostered. The second problem I have is in terms of entertainment, which is part of the Nimusei HaAkum as a quest for ethics or morals or a message or values. You'd be surprised at the many people in America who derive their values from Hollywood, the entertainment industry. As I'll say, this movie had a deep moral, all right? The fact that it's couched in even a deep message, not a message, not always positive ones from our perspective, but even if they are, the fact that it could be couched in entertainment, which is otherwise depraved, is really no justification for it. And I think that's a danger also. Invariably, the message is going to be Keneged HaTorah. I maintain that a Jew who derives his Mussar from the movies is in a bad way, in terrible shape. And you see, it's impossible that it does not have some effect, unless it's viewed as pure entertainment. And, you can't analyze that, you just can't analyze or think or derive or discuss. That's really not our world. Rabbi Chaya always used to say that, He laughed at the notion of movie criticism or theater criticism as instruction to people how to waste their time in the most effective possible way. Which on one level, that's what it is. You know, you're looking for leisure, looking to escape, looking to do something which is almost tangential to life. It's the best way to do it. And if people argue, don't waste your time at this movie, waste your time at that movie. And there's a whole industry that's devoted to that. If you look at it from that perspective, and on the one hand you realize what it is, and on the other hand you realize what it's not. And even one who indulges in it is sure to keep an emotional distance, not to mention a spiritual distance. And of course you have the problem of Isurim, which are going to arise also, particularly where the culture becomes more and more degenerate, and studios or networks compete with each other to try to find even more debauched means, more excessive means of appealing to the prurient interest of the human being. Isurim, violations of tzniyus, of pritzus, of nivul peh, of arroyos, so really the entertainment world, to some more limited extent, literature gives us a window into a world that's not ours. It's not ours. And from which the Torah wants us to be spared. The Torah is a refuge from that. Senator Rav Cook, and actually it's a couple of years ago on a Friday night discussing literature, Rav Cook actually had a positive attitude towards the literature of his day. Because he said literature, fiction, for example, gives a person, I'm not really into fiction myself. I mean, life that seems fictional oftentimes, but Rav Cook said that literature gives us the ability to look at the world through the eyes of another, all right? Another that you can never experience, say, a knight in the Middle Ages or a peasant in Africa, etc. So it gives you the ability to look at life through someone else's prism. And he said, in that there's a value. But of course, even he recognized and wrote that positive value, that virtue, cannot undo or supersede the Isurim of the Torah. We must be very careful that if we're momentarily looking at the world through the eyes of another, those eyes are not completely antithetical to Torah. Because if they are, then yatsa scharo v'hefsedo. Those are three yellow lights, three cautions that we have to exercise, we're very mindful of. The exposure to violence, the tendency of people to derive moral lessons from entertainment, and of course the issur involved. Now there's something else also that goes with this. So that's Rashi's first shot. Rashi has a second shot as well, and he says, "Meir, darkei amori shamanu chachamim." What are darkei amori? Traditions, customs, but they're really superstitions. Superstitions. The superstitions of every culture invariably penetrate Jewish life. And I don't want to get into any examples now. They're obvious to all of us. It should be obvious. But things which we look at as sacred Jewish entities or icons or relics or practices or statements, etc. I once mentioned poo-poo-poo is actually Italian. It's not Jewish. But we do this thing ourselves. These things are not part of our world, but Wein said also years ago that just like you travel around the world and you pick up souvenirs, so the Jewish people in our long exile picked up many souvenirs also. Wherever we stop, we pick up a superstition here, darkei amori there, etc. Some of them are quite old, some of them are very new. Some things which you think are part of Jewish life are not only not part of Jewish life and against the Torah, but outright non-Jewish practices that somehow we think we've consecrated to our use. So, Minchas Chinuch has another guideline that we traditionally use. He quotes the Marik, the Essay of Cologne. Cologne's a famous Italian family, but this is a Columbus family, a lot of Cologne. The Marik said, "The ain't issa b'chuko sagoi elo o'im huchok lohem belotam kedake amore." This is chuko sa'akum is something which they do for no reason. For no reason. Alright? No discernible or no rational reason. Now, you have those things in every culture. You certainly have them in American culture also. All right? What's a chok below tam? I would start putting the fork on the left and not the right. What's the difference? I get it wrong anyway. Well, what's the difference? Whenever I'm admonished, I say, what's the difference? So here it is. It's there. You have the silverware. What's that?
You sound like my grandchildren.
Yeah. What's that? Right. Right. Or I guess that hook looks nice. But who knows? I mean, I don't know. I never put a napkin in my lap. I always tell people, look, I've been practicing since the age of 3 not to spill anything on my pants. I think I have it down pat. So if someone sets me to the wedding once, yes, but you have to be mindful of the person next to you. Oh, that's true. I didn't think of that. Maybe he hasn't been practicing since the age of 3. But the Marik says, that's a hook below time. You should do something because people do it. That's what it is. That's what it is. That a Jew has to avoid. Why? Because we're on Chacham B'Navam. We're wise, understanding, rational people. You can't just do things because people do them. You have to think before. If it has some value, it continues. Oshi Yisraelim Nisnagim Alpi Tzius. Also lots of promotion. First, some habit of modesty that we have that they don't. Third, Avol Mieshbo Toelas. If there's some benefit to it, if there's some benefit, and there's some rational reason for it, then you can follow. There's no issur involved. It's not that we avoid anything that they do. We have to avoid only those things which have no tam, no reason, no rational reason for it, or that send a message which is antithetical to the message of Torah. Now the question is, how do we measure toela? How do we measure a benefit? And that's, I would say, by the way, you find that invariably, where does modern culture eventuate? Where does it eventuate? In our rights. In promiscuity, in immorality. That's just across the board. And it's no different ancient Egyptian culture, ancient Greek culture, modern American culture. It's the exact same thing. The people think they're more bawdy today. They're not. In fact, it's worse than the times of the Greeks. It's worse. But it's just as bad today. Are they heading in that direction? What's that? Right. That's right. But the topics are the same, and the conversation is the same. I remember I was in Athens once, and right beneath the Acropolis, there's an ancient theater where they still put on plays. Now, I say ancient, I'm going back to the early time of the second Beis HaMikdash. Plato lived actually towards the end of the first Beis HaMikdash. So at the end of the beginning of the first Beis, there's a theater that's still in operation. And the users still use it for the rabbis, you know, sound and life, etc. But it's not changed. This aspect of the culture is one which the Jew has to be most sensitive to. And that's why I think the Parshas Arayos in Acharemos and Kedoshim are really bookended, bracketed by these admonitions. In Acharemos, and Losecho B'chukos Agoy at the end of Kedoshim. Because a person who becomes immersed in Chukos Akum invariably will wind up violating Arayos. It's stolen away. That is the end goal of the culture in all its aspects. So how then do we measure Toelas? At least I think the Torah says that Ushmartemus Sukkot Mishmat Hashem Yisrael Sama Adam B'chai B'ahem. What's B'chai B'ahem? The whole Joshua B'chai B'ahem L'Shiyamus B'ahem, that the person violates the Torah, but for the three cardinal sins, because the Torah is meant for life. I think it's more than that. I think B'chai B'ahem means that Rashi even says B'chai B'ahem is La'olam Abah, alright? Not just La'olam Abah, but I think it's both. B'chai B'ahem means, does this practice, does this Chokha Akram better my life in this world, and it will prepare me for life in Olam Haba? That's what we define everything. Is this adding to my spirituality, my spiritual state? That's B'chai B'chai. If it adds to it, that's the Tohela. That's the Tohelas. If it adds to it. If it doesn't add, or certainly detracts, so no doubt, that's the problem area in which we lie. Arroyos today, you know, are the swampland of modern culture, and as we recognize, you know, just look around in the modern world, traditional family values are on the defensive. They're under attack. In fact, it's not even politically correct to defend traditional family values anymore. So in fact, we're the boomer. We represent to the rest of the world the notion that they just put this thing as objective morality, as objective right and wrong. There is such a thing as a lifestyle that was created for man, which he can best enjoy in this world, and prepares him for the existence of the soul in the next world. Prepares him for a life of perfection that we maintain. Insofar as we retain that separateness, and we don't seek to blend in with the popular culture or make it our own, then in fact we are zocha to the avdulus coming on. We have that great bracha. The Medrash says here, the beginning of this parsha, Kishoshana ben Achochim, that the Jewish people, Shlomo compared in Shir Shirim to a rose among thorns, a famous phrase, rose among thorns. So he says, the Medrash says that we have that ability. And the proof is that it's almost the beginning of our history. You take a culture as degenerate as that of Aram, Ravon, and Suel, and they're filled with the trickery and deceit, and who emerged from there? Rifkei Menu, Tzedekes. She's Kishoshana ben Achochim, like a rose among thorns. So she's able to survive and overcome and leave and maintain her purity and her righteousness. And that really is the unique ability of Christ. That's what we were, the Medrash says, in the Shayim, Kishoshim and Achachim. That's what we were in, that's what we became in Canaan also. Otherwise, the thorns are going to pierce and perforate the rose and harm it. But in fact, he has that ability. V'chai Bohem, the Medrash says that wherever we are, even in the worst environment, just like the rose retains its fragrance, even after it dries up, so does Klal Yisrael, in the most hostile environment, can still retain the fragrance of the rose. How? Through the Reach of Torah and Mitzvah. The fragrance of Torah, the fragrance of Mitzvah, should give us our uniqueness that enables us to withstand the onslaught of the thorn. But it's only in a context to recognize the danger of Chukos Akum. The modern culture is very seductive, very seductive. I'm not saying, you know, I'm not a hardliner that just doesn't have its
its purposes, there's a value in payment as well. But mindful of the dangers, one has to be very careful and make sure that the world of the Chukos, Akum, are only for Toelas and never for our destruction, only enhance our lives, never detract from it, only elevate us as Jews and do not lower us, and make sure we always maintain our identity as Kishoshana ben Achochim, as that rose among thorns. All right, I thank you very much.
Yeah. No? Are you sure?